Blog Talk Radio.
No.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm really excited to bring such a wonderful, humble soul to our audience today. We have author Dan Milstein, who wrote 1 Minute Miracle. And Dan has lived a very colorful and interesting, adventurous life. And in that journey that he's created, he found a calling in his own sense of soul to really combine his life and his experience and find his bliss. In finding his bliss, Dan went into a selfless mode of service in reforming prisoners for the last 18 years and evolving them through the inside of their core and their soul in the outside of how they express themselves. And I love having this forum to bring people that have done such incredible work and maintained such a humble heart and soul to all of you in the listening audience to really know that your purpose and your soul purpose and your sacred purpose are all dependent upon your passion and what moves you, and that there are no limitations and everyone is capable of making a positive change as we walk on this earth. So without further ado, let me introduce my buddy Dan Milstein. God bless you, Dan, author of 1 Minute Miracle. Welcome, Dan, to Unlimited Realities.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Hey, Lisa, before I forget, are you being evacuated yet?
No, and let me talk a little bit about that just in case, because my electric has started to go in and out. And so if we get disconnected, it's because, well, Mother Nature decided to sweep through my area and disconnect my technology. So for everyone listening out there, if, you know, you hear nothing, it's because I'm in the middle of the outskirts of a hurricane right now. And I'm, you know, cooking a lot while I'm doing the show because I have my work office in the back of the house. And, you know, I've weathered the worst of what Mother Nature can do with hurricanes, so they really don't freak me out very much. The kids are actually in school, so I mean that's how we go, that's how we roll here. Dan, you are such a wonderful soul.
I'm in Southern California, so if I get cut off, you know it's an earthquake.
Oh God!
It's either an earthquake or I have to pee.
Well, just don't bring the phone into the bathroom, okay, Dan? Just, you know, I think we'll have to draw the line there. So,
all right,
you know,
now that everybody's
got our personals. Yeah, it's all right. We'll have fun. Dan, let's talk about your sacred purpose here. And you may not even, you're such a humble heart, you may not even look at it as such, but it really is phenomenal what you've been able to create and do, and such a needed aspect in our institutions here in America, you know, primarily in the prison system, because it's such an overlooked or underlooked kind of need in regard to, you know, personal reform. It's always, you know, throw them in there, here's your sentence, and there's not a lot of, other than you know, there's a lot of Christianity that's in the system that a lot of people attach onto, and that's wonderful. But there isn't a kind of an overall peace, and you really created that with your book, 1 Minute Miracle, to create 12 affirmations, and you also use mudras. And let's talk a little bit about what mudras are, and just let's get into that.
What happened?
Go ahead, Dan.
Are you still there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. Let's see. Mudras. You know, when people put their hands together in a prayer pose in front of their heart, in the East, they use the word namaste. And
okay.
Namaste means the God in me honors the God in you, or the spirit in me honors the spirit in you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a word that could heal the world. And funny enough how some kind of darkness changes into light with very odd circumstances. The word namaste, when you put your hands together in a greeting, it's a very deep greeting to say, you know, I honor your soul or whatever you want to call it. And that came about because people had diseases. And touching and kissing and hugging and all that kind of stuff wasn't very safe.
Ah.
So out of that dark place where people couldn't touch each other came this word that could heal the world if everybody just honored the light within each other. And in doing that, we could certainly bypass the thing about judgment, you know, thou shalt not
right.
judge. Boy, did I
right.
learn that in the joint. You know, I started out doing attitudinal healing groups in prison after meeting Jerry Jampolsky, who wrote, I don't know, what, 30 years ago, Love is Letting Go of Fear?
Right, right. He's been around
Love
a while.
Is Letting Go. And I met Jerry, and I said, you know, we need to open up one of these centers down here in Orange County. And that led to doing groups here in Orange County and led me into the prison, doing groups in prison. So over 18 years that I was doing groups in prisons all around the world, really, and starting other divisions, so to speak, of Visions for Prisons, which is my nonprofit, you know.
Okay.
And after sitting in more than 1,000 groups of prisoners telling me their stories, I find it very difficult to hold on to judgment. I still judge like a maniac because I'm a Virgo and I'm a fault finder. But after sitting in all of those groups and listening to all these stories, it's impossible. Impossible to judge. That's why it says don't judge, because it's not possible. You can't judge another human being.
No,
you have
you
no
can't
idea
walk in their
who
shoes.
They are.
Right.
No idea who they are. Not even a clue. Not even what happened to them when they were a 2-month-old baby, for God's sakes. You couldn't even
right.
describe anybody's whole being with judgment. So that's number one. Everybody should learn namaste, could learn namaste, and that would probably save a few lives, because I know it has in prisons. I've got boxes of letters and stuff from prisoners that tell me that being light has actually freed their soul and they're able to go home and be humans again.
Wonderful.
But that's the first affirmation, I am light.
Wonderful.
I should say it's the first. I should have made those agreements instead of affirmations. Then I could have climbed on Don Miguel Ruiz. Yes, you know those four agreements.
Right.
Four
right.
ain't enough, hey, Don Miguel. Four ain't enough, baby. We need at least 12.
Okay. Let's
so tell him that next time you interview him about his four agreements.
I think his plan was to simplify, because it's such an instantaneous fast food world that the
yeah.
average person, they really just want to get it and get it over with, and they really don't want to do the digging, you know?
That's why I changed the book from the Mudra of Light to the 1-Minute Miracle, and now I'm thinking the Mudra of Light would have been a better title, because now yoga is really one of the most popular things in the world. Everybody
right.
knows about yoga these days.
That's right.
Yoga, Tai Chi, all of those things. So
now, okay, let's get into, and please, you know, share whatever you feel comfortable with, but what brought you to the discovery of self, the self-awareness, the bliss, the desire to meditate and create a connection with divine? You know, you are fear. Okay, because you're... You know, what I love about you, Dan, is you're real people, and you're a self-proclaimed ex-biker from New Jersey. Is that right?
That's me.
I love it. I love that about you, Dan. And I love that you have gone through and seen the dark and the light, and you made your choice based on that. It wasn't something crammed down your throat. It wasn't something you were, you know, born and engulfed in from infancy. It's something you actually sought out on your own. And for me, that really spells authenticity, and that really spells, you know, walking your talk in truth. So let's talk a little bit about the fear that got you there.
Yeah, you know, people walk around all the time saying, well, I tell people that worrying is like sitting in a rocking chair. You know, it gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere.
Yes.
And people say, well, I'm just a natural born worrier. I just worry all the time, always have, always will. And my answer is, well, stop.
Right.
Don't do that anymore. I mean, that's
just
dumb.
It.
It's never gotten you anywhere. It's never done anything. It's never solved anything. So just stop it.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I couldn't stop my mind from attacking me constantly, because being a fault finder, Virgo-style fault finder, I have to look in the mirror every day, too. I don't mind looking in the newspaper and seeing an error every single day on some page of the newspaper. I don't mind that. But that with that same laser-like ability to find things that are wrong, I have to look in the mirror every day, too. So
right.
That was my life. And let's see, I guess my first inclination that there was something, that there was a world that was a lot more fun than the way I was living it, was when Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the TM dude, Transcendental Meditation dude,
right,
was on TV here in L.A. And I wasn't doing anything at the time. Of course, I was never doing anything at any time. But I was sitting here watching him on TV, and he had all the flowers around him and his robes, and he was always giggling and talking about the stars and the moon and all that stuff, and how they had, well, you know, I mean, it was really some profound stuff that I had never had interest in or heard about before. So I went down, my wife and I and my boy learned TM.
Great.
That was, I don't know, it's 70-something, 1979, 71, I don't know, somewhere back in there. It was a ways back. And when I walked out of that session with my new magic mantra, I noticed that the sky was blue. And, I had noticed that before, but usually I was on some kind of hallucinatory herb, you know. But I noticed that I was very clear, because I had to quit drinking and quit smoking 2 weeks before the TM initiation, you know?
Right.
So I was clear, and I learned the mantra and transcended right away and went outside and said, my goodness, the world looks pretty.
Wow.
And that was my first inclination that, well, from watching Maharishi, knowing that some human being could be like that, act like that, and be smarter at the same time, not be a crazy person like I thought I was. And so that was about it. And then the next one was somebody at the TM organization turned me on to Jerry Jampolsky's, turned me on to A Course in Miracles. That's what it was.
Okay.
I did A Course in Miracles for like 3 years, one night a month, I think it was, for 3 years. We did all the lessons, blah, blah, blah. I was really into The Course in Miracles. And then I found out, well, that was just a bunch of Zen blah, blah. And I could do the Zen without the blah, blah. So I went home and built a Zen garden. And then I got turned on to Jerry Jampolsky's work, Love is Letting Go of Fear.
Right.
And I think I read, Teach Only Love, his second, third book. I read that on one Saturday morning, and I cried throughout the book. Whoa, what the hell is this?
Triggered your heart, huh?
Yeah. I read it again on Sunday, and the same thing happened. I thought,
wow.
This Jampolsky dude, I got to go find him. So I went and tracked him down, and met him, and turned out we had some mutual friends. I mean, it was pretty cool. So I started doing attitude healing, and between the principles of the attitudinal healing for my emotional state and my Zen practice for my spiritual state, it's pretty well balanced. And of course, the prisoners taught me, I mean, almost everything I know from their stories and how they reacted and how they acted. And I mean, it was an experience that it can't even be shared.
Well, we're going to try.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, you're going in, obviously you're coming from an alpha male persona, having been a biker and, you know, fearless on many, many levels. And then all of a sudden, you know, you find yourself reading something that triggers your heart and really expands yourself. Not only that, but you connect with this man, Jerry Jampolsky, and connect with the prison system then, which starts an 18-year journey of actually working with prisoners on kind of like an internal spiritual prison reform. So that had to be a trip. I mean, walking into a prison, which, you're
I'm claustrophobic, too.
They're what? I'm sorry?
I'm claustrophobic, too.
Oh, you're kidding. So you walked into a prison with all
when
this energy bouncing around.
When the door slammed behind me, I didn't like it.
Oh, I bet. I bet. I bet, because you're in there, you're kind of vulnerable. You know, you're dealing with, okay, how are they going to receive me? Are they going to try and attack me and beat me up? You know, I'm sure that all these thoughts are going through your head, because they're going through my head, obviously.
And theirs, too.
Yeah.
And their heads, too.
Well, what was it like? I mean, obviously, okay, the prison door shut behind you. What's your feeling? Did you experience a little fear at that point?
A little.
Okay.
All right. For me, being claustrophobic is like watching one of those movies where they got somebody buried underground and they're trying to find them and save them before they die from suffocation. And imagine being in that coffin, you know, underground, clawing. That's claustrophobia.
Right.
So that's what it feels like in the when the doors start to slam behind you. Well, for me, anyway.
Right.
Most people on the planet don't feel, for one thing.
It's limited. It's a safe feeling of what they can handle, you know.
Exactly.
They don't want to stretch their boundaries.
Infinite love flows through us like crazy. Otherwise, we wouldn't be being breathed.
Yes.
Something is
Amen.
Breathing us, and it doesn't give a big hoot. Who you are, what you've done, none of that stuff. How much money
That's
you have.
Right.
It don't matter. So as long as I'm being breathed in that unconditionally loving way, then I'm pretty much free.
Amen. And to remain mindful of that is the key, because there's too many that, you know, have a comfortable limit of what they can feel and what they're able to expose themselves to, and they never really, you know, stretch that capacity for love, for forgiveness, for compassion. And, you know, we see with our economy, with our lives, with so many people right now, that escapism is more of the norm than actually delving into the heart of what we're feeling. And so, you know, we have all of these circumstances that actually, you know, are catalysts for what unfortunately ends up overcrowded prisons. And there are so many people in the prison system that get a little bit of an aha while they're in there, because they recognize that there's got to be more than what they're experiencing. And so here you come in.
That percentage is very, very low.
Okay.
The people in prison who get anything out of it are rare. mostly they're victims of post-traumatic stress disorder or post-incarceration stress disorder. But it's
okay.
The same as post-traumatic stress. And that's why one of my campaigns that I'm doing now is for post-traumatic stress victims and their families is free yoga for vets. In fact, I just got word Saturday from one of our, it wasn't even a yoga studio, one of our health clinics locally here picked up on the free yoga for vets and is now doing, what did they say they were doing, acupuncture, massage.
Oh, how cool.
All kinds of health services, free for vets.
Oh, wow.
Based on our free yoga for vets, and they don't even have a yoga studio, so they're going to open one so they can do free yoga for vets, too.
Oh, God
bless.
That's
just one health center out in Glendale that's doing it, Glendale, California. One health center. And,
right.
man, we get the whole world to do that, and it'll be nice.
Yeah,
because there's no cure.
No, there's no cure, and it's something that, you know, it's beyond a disservice to how we treat our vets in regard to, you know, their acclimation when they come back. I mean, it's astounding to me, you know, how it's such a shoved under the rug aspect. But let's go back to the prisoners. Now,
those are my prisoners, the veterans.
Yes, yes.
70%
they are.
Of the homeless. 70% of the homeless here are vets.
Wow. You know, it seems unconstitutional. It seems like this is, you know, it's a no-brainer and in a common sense way. And why is this not being addressed? And God bless people like you who are, you know, addressing it. It's what did you feel when you were meeting the prisoners in starting your prison work and dealing with the affirmations and the mudras? What was their initial reaction? Was it folded arms? Was it glaring eyes? Was it, you know, did you feel like hostility?
At the beginning, one of my guys, who I met when he was 15 in a juvenile prison here, and out of one of my attitudinal healing groups for cancer patients and stuff here in Orange County, lady was a lawyer and with the ACLU, and she was defending a kid in a juvenile center. So she said, listen, nobody can get to this kid. He's going to do 9 years for stealing a pizza because he was, you know, he was like a three striker for children. And nobody will talk to him. He won't talk to anybody. He thinks all the cops are pigs and all tattooed up. So I said, yeah, I'll go see him. So I went to see him, and we got along really well. And then he started getting all the guys together. Every time I came to visit him, he started getting all the guys together at the juvenile center. And saying, hey, you got to come listen to this guy, learn how to meditate, you bunch of idiots. So pretty soon on Sunday mornings, we used to take over the chapel at 6 o'clock in the morning. It was about an hour away from my house. But we used to take over the chapel at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's the only time they would give us. Most of the guys skipped breakfast to be there or came in late. And pretty soon I had a whole chapel full of guys meditating. All
no kidding.
All juveniles, all nuttier than fruitcakes, all with not a bit of love in their lives, or they wouldn't have been there.
Wow.
And so with that kind of, somebody said that Jesus said, and nobody knows this for sure, I don't know what the hell he said, he said we must visit the prisoners. And, you know, that has a lot of meanings. It means visiting the prisoner inside yourself, too. So that infinite love that's flowing through you, you can put out there instead of holding on to it for yourself because you're afraid you're not going to get any more, all that kind of, you know, psychological mumbo-jumbo.
Right.
I'm sorry. You're a therapist, huh?
Oh, no, it's okay. I empower them. I don't... I don't want to make anyone dependent on me. My whole point is empowering the individual. That's my MO. So if you can't take responsibility for your stuff, then you're probably not going to vibe with me. So that's just how I roll. But anyway, you've got this piece here that is really unheard of, because it's not something that we hear a lot about within the prison system, that other than a pastor and a non-denominational, you know, believer in Christ or God, have we ever had any other type of reform really start to enter the prison systems? I mean, there might be some more now, maybe some Muslim leaders and, you know, Jewish rabbis and things like that.
Is it worse now? Oh, yeah. Because they're so overcrowded, safety is a factor. You can't have civilians wandering around in some of these joints.
Okay.
And there's no place to put more than six guys anymore in a group, because everything is being used. The gyms are being used for triple bunks, for God's sake. 600 guys are in one gym not too far from here. In the gym. You know how many bathrooms a gym has, you know, a high school gym? Well, there's 600 guys living in this one gym.
Oh.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the way we're treating anybody who is a little bit different. It's just a difference of love.
Right.
You know, with all of the thousands and thousands of prisoners that I've talked to and still many, many of that I know, it's always lack of love that gets them there. Always. And now you're put in a place where lack of love. What are you talking about, love in a prison? I got kicked out of more prisons for talking about love than anybody's been in. Because, you know, some of those fundamentalists are guards and administrators.
That's true.
And chaplains, and I come in there talking about forgiveness and unconditional love, and, geez, I'm persona non grata.
So how long did it take before they started to receive your message? How long was it before you started to see, you know,
well,
was it immediate?
Right away. Oh, yeah, immediate.
Wow.
Immediate.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like giving
somebody
a sip of water. Uh-huh. It's like giving somebody a sip of water who's thirsty. Of course, they're going to respond immediately. Whether it lasts or not, you don't know. But with many of them, in fact, that one kid is now 40, and I just got an email from him like day before yesterday. He's now 40 years old, so that was 24 years ago.
And is he still a practicing meditator?
Oh yeah, he's hot. He runs a recovery home.
How wonderful! And this is all. You know, what a dharma, what a purpose you've provided. And, you know, if one person can change one person on this walk that we walk on this earth, you know, it's the ripple effect is phenomenal. And to think of how many souls that were starving for, you know, just really to be seen and validated in their truth or in their hearts or in their love, that you really helped co-create this divine link and connection. The ripple effect is phenomenal, and I'm sure the aspects of growth that you've created, not only in the individual, but within their families and who they ended up touching after, you know, your awareness to them, the opening up is a floodgate of love and positivity, and it's a phenomenal ripple effect. It really is a phenomenal ripple effect. What do you feel was the most poignant point of your 18 years of doing this? Was it how many that stayed within the program of learning and tapping in and meditating and growing? Was it that there were so many newcomers that kept coming and going? Or was it just the acceptance that they really were struggling and hungry for some link, some divinity? And And to see that light go off in them was such a life-changing experience for yourself. What was it that moved you in the process?
ends up being the one-minute miracle, but backwards, sort of deconstructing the one-minute miracle of the routine, the 12 agreements. You know? I was in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and we were going to visit a youth prison the next morning, and I was sitting with a couple of friends of mine when we were meditating together, trying to figure out what we were going to do at the youth prison the next morning, because like they don't have any soap or change of clothes, and most of them don't even have flip flops for God's sakes for shoes. They sleep side by side. Some of them sleep sideways because they can't lay flat because there's no room to lay flat. You have to lay in, like, spooning each other.
Oh, wow.
So it's really bad, bad, bad. So we were sitting there trying to figure out what we were going to give them the next day, and the mudra of light, the one-minute miracle, starting with I am light, I am life, I am love, came to us, like, in seconds. It feels like we were given this routine, ritual, celebration, ceremony. All 12 mudras, all 12 affirmations, they all came to us within minutes. And then we all sat and practiced them together. And then the next morning, we went to the youth prison, and we first gave a demonstration to the cops, and some of the cops even had tears in their eyes. The prisons in different countries are different because in Sao Paulo, they have almost everybody in the prison in Sao Paulo is from Sao Paulo.
Okay.
So it's a whole different kind of environment. So the guards really do care a bit, in a way. If they're under scrutiny. Anyway, so we taught that mudra the next morning, and all the kids responded, and we had a great time teaching it and talking about it. And I mean, it was just really spectacular. And we said, boy, this is something cool. And it was something that we gave to the kids that they could remember and use. So
right.
It wasn't like, you know, so that was that's the most spectacular kind of thing that ever happened. It was a whole channeled experience.
Yeah, that's pretty spectacular. Isn't that, like, considered one of the worst prisons in the world?
Well,
isn't it one of the barest of, like, the most primitive of prisons?
Well, one of the prisons that we were in, not necessarily in Brazil, because we wouldn't want to talk about it too much, the guards were, the guards were routinely beating up a kid or two every month, and some of them died. So, and that was not, they were the worst kids that particular week or month, but that was for control.
Yeah.
So, and they did it in front of many of the other prisoners, so, you know, so they could
see
who was in control. And one of the, one or two of the mothers started a group, attitudinal healing group down there for themselves, for the mothers of the prisoners. And they contacted us to come in. And from what we hear, because we're still in there, and the mothers are still in there doing groups, there's no more of that going on in the prison. There hasn't been any murders in there by guards. There's been deaths and fights and stuff like that, but no
right.
murders by guards in the last couple of years, they report.
And that's something that you created. That's something that your light
well, you
and
know,
your awareness and
it's not all that great. You know, I also have friends who started meditating, got their lives together, bought a motorcycle, and killed themselves. So
yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
You can't take credit for it. All you can do is spread the love unconditionally.
Right.
And that's all you can do. I mean,
you
say it's a common dogma, right? Everybody, it's not going to happen. A common dogma But a common experience like love can be universally felt. Yeah?
Right.
So that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for a dogma. We're not looking for rules. We're looking for something that reminds us of our true purpose.
But let's not underestimate the seed of love you planted there, because without that seed of love initiated, you know, it took root. And not on an egotistical way on any level, but let's give credit where credit's due here. You did a phenomenal thing. And because it was based in love and not ego, it grew. I mean, it was embraced and it really grew. And to not have the prisoners be beaten by the guards right now, I think is a phenomenal breakthrough. Just, you know, any small positive, you know, is a phenomenal, wonderful breakthrough. Now let's get into the mudras a little bit. What's a great mudra that you can offer our listening audience as a tool for centering? Now, mudras are using your fingers. I want to define to our listening audience what a mudra is. You started to get into it a little bit in regard to the prayer stance from
putting the hands together like that is a mudra. You've seen statues of Buddhas with their thumb and index finger together, or thumb and middle finger together. Well, that's also a mudra. And what that depicts is that's the first affirmation and mudra in the one-minute miracle. What that depicts in order of your pinky is your mind, least important. Ring finger, body. Right?
Ah,
have a body.
Okay.
Middle finger, that's why we use it, spirit. No, spirit.
That's a powerful one when it's used negatively, isn't it? I mean,
it's the most powerful because it's the middle finger representing spirit, and if you don't have the spirit breathing you, you ain't got none of the other stuff.
Right. Okay.
And then the pointy finger is your emotions. Now, when you touch your emotions to your thumb, which is the divine, that's what's supposed to make us divine, right? Having a thumb.
Right.
Yeah, that's about it, too, by the way. So when we touch the index finger to the thumb, we're saying, my mind, body, spirit, and emotions, all connected to the divine. And then I say, I am light. So my mind, body, spirit, and emotions are all light. That's my identity. I am light, I am light, I am light. That's japa. I keep repeating that mantra over and over and over, all 12 of them actually. But I am light, I am light, I am light. And your brain is going to start to interpret that. Here's one of the most important things in the world for women with this I am light thing.
Okay.
Your brain is going to start to interpret this in so many ways that you don't even know about. So when something is out there that's not supporting you as light, you are going to begin to reject it because it's not supporting your new identity.
Amen.
Automatically. It's the most magnificent diet. I don't even like the word. It's the most magnificent balance of your body and the world that there is to have that recognition that you are light. Photons, subatomic particles, all that crap. It's all light. And that's who you are. So
that's wonderful.
There's hardly anything, and nothing is going to stick to you. Nothing sticks to the light. Yeah. We got how much time again?
We have another 20 minutes.
Oh, good. The second one is also cool. You cup your hands together. And that's the chalice mudra.
Okay.
And you look down into that empty cup and you say, I am life. And you notice that the cup is empty. That's why it's the chalice, the holy grail, because you can put anything you want into it. Now, if you want to see something cool, watch this. Whatever you have put into that empty cup and you notice that it's empty,
right.
There's no meaning in that emptiness. So whatever you've done in the past that bothers you, give it a new meaning. Give it a new meaning. You don't have to change it. You don't have to erase it. You just give it a new meaning. Because life comes meaningless except for the meaning you give it.
So does that help change the perspective?
That's immediate forgiveness.
Gotcha. Now,
it no longer needs forgiveness.
What if there is still some angst, anger, fear associated with that that needs to be moved through before we can change the... Okay.
Keep repeating the new meaning. Keep repeating. It's a lesson. Whatever your meaning is, you know, it can be deeper than that. But, you know, it's a lesson. It's not a scar. It's not a dark mark. It's not a sin for sure. No such thing as that. That's a ridiculous sin. Just dumb.
So in regard to changing it, you would say that changing our perspective till we believe it. So we have to repeat it. We need to repeat it and go into the emotion and feeling of looking at it differently before it shifts and alters within us.
When you do it every morning, that's exactly right. That's why you went to school, because you were smart late.
You know, life experience was just as toolful.
I'll skip the third one, I am love, because everybody knows about that when you touch your heart. But when you do the Tarzan pose, number four, and you put your fists on your chest like Tarzan beating his chest, you know?
Okay.
And you say, out loud, I am beauty. I am beauty. It doesn't say I am cute, I am beautiful, or none of those things. It's magic. It's magic, especially for women who are concerned with what the magazines say is beautiful. The hell with that. You are beauty.
Okay, that's good.
I had a woman many years ago when I first taught. I taught this at, Noetic Science. And she was in the audience, big audience, 300-400 people. And I taught this at Noetic Science. And a woman called me up a couple of days later from back east, and she said, Dan, I had a radical mastectomy about 5 years ago, and I have not been able to look at myself in the mirror since. And she was bawling on the phone trying to get the words out. She said, I stood in front of my mirror naked today with my hands on my scars and said, I am beauty.
Aww. And she felt it. She got it.
Yep. She got it. So
that's
it's there
wonderful.
Within us. That stuff is so, it's so powerful within us, and we're so afraid of letting it out. Boy,
yes.
It seems
Amen.
A shame.
You know what it is that it's almost as if we've been on some level programmed not to honor ourselves. And in not honoring ourselves, we don't give ourselves credit for what's inherent within us. And what's inherent within us is that light, is that pulsing, is that life force of divinity, and you know, whatever you want to call it, it's the same force that vibrates through every living soul. So it's a powerful awareness, and one that is often taken for granted on so many levels, and even within so many traditional religions. Is that there's a lot of dogma, there's a lot of doctrine, there's a lot of shoulds, and not allow a lot of allowance and connectedness. Right. And to really empower the individual to make their own connectedness, to really honor the divinity within them, and to feel that pulsation, that vibration, that self-love, all-encompassing, is a very overwhelming feeling. And it's overwhelming for those who are used to the feeling. It's way overwhelming for someone who's never felt it before.
Yeah.
So all of this work that, you know, you very, very humbly have provided that...
You keep saying humble. Because you are.
You're a very humble soul. There's no ego with you. You're a humble soul. I love it.
If it wasn't for my ego, I wouldn't be able to get up there and kick some ass.
Well, I mean, yeah, ego's necessary. You know, we need to tap into that, everyone. I'm not an ego basher by any means. But you're not coming from a place of, you know, look at the wonderful stuff I've done, you know. And you know, for that, I have to give you kudos, dude. I do. So, you know, let's talk a little bit. We've got 15 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about what we could do today in creating that shift within us to really start to receiving. You've gone into some wonderful mudras in practice. And what can we do in our breath, in our awareness, in our meditation, in our just a simple what would you say is the most simple connectedness mudra or stance or positioning that you can offer us?
Teacherofpeace.com.
Let me put that on the chat window here. Okay.
You go to teacherofpeace.com and you click on the pretty lady and you do the mudra of light with her, or the 1 minute miracle. Actually, there's about, I don't know, we may have 15 1 minute miracles on YouTube.
Oh, wonderful.
Some of them are as long as 5 minutes long. Some of them have we have a Mudra of Light song, you know, I am light, I am love, I am, you know, all that stuff.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's on one of the videos, or maybe two. Learn that. Do those videos with somebody. I'm on there about 10 times because of my ego. I want to let everybody know how pretty I am. And after you learn this, you go and print up this certificate that's on our website, and it says Teacher of Peace.
Okay.
And you put your name on it. And what it says on the certificate is, guided by the light of forgiveness, every step I take and every word I speak is a prayer for peace. So you put your name on that certificate and you stick it up on your refrigerator or in your bathroom or someplace where you can see it. Then you go out and you say, hey, listen, can I show you a little routine? And somebody will say, sure. And you put your fingers together and you say, I am light, repeat after me. And they say, I am light, repeat after me. And you say, no, not the repeat after me part, just the I am light part. And then you do all 12 affirmations with them like a call and response with a person right across from you that you're looking in the eye, except when you're saying, I see only the enlightened, because then your eyes are covered. So you
right.
can't see.
Okay.
So you teach that to them, and then you walk away, and you say, I am a teacher of peace. And you can do that in supermarket line. I've done it everywhere. I've felt more people walking down the street. I mean, I just don't walk up to them and say, hey, dummy. You know, it's usually part of the conversation. How come you're so happy? Well, things like that. Well, because I do a little yoga routine every day to remind me of who I really am. Because otherwise, I'm going to forget. And I do forget. Believe me, and when I forget, the room needs to be cleared.
Well, you know, I mean, we're human, you know. We are human in this little walk. And we do get our little human challenges along the way. And, you know, the whole key is not to take it too seriously.
If it wasn't for my anger issues, Daniel wouldn't go into the lion's den.
Well, you have to have the passion, right?
Mm-hmm. That's where it comes from for me, is my anger. Because I was born a poor black child, so that sort of screwed me up right away.
So when did you turn into a white man?
shortly after I learned my true purpose here. And if anybody knows Steve Martin in the movie Jerk, enjoy yourself.
Well, you are, you know, you're a barrel of laughs and fun, and I really love that you're taking this in stride with such integrity. I mean, really, I really, you're a unique soul. So
hey, did anybody say that they should go buy my book?
1 Minute Miracle by Dan Milstein.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. 1 Minute Miracle. I've got it on the chat room. I've got
right.
it blogged in. I've got your websites up there. I've got
it's
Visions for Prisons.
I think Amazon has 108 million copies left.
Oh well, let's buy them all up because. But you know what? It's one of those types of books that you could inspire another person who could take it to another type of group of people or institution and create change. And
well, next year, 2012, we're going to gather up 108 million teachers of peace around the world so we can have a party. And the first thing we're going to start selling is 2013 calendars.
Good. Good. nip the whole fear negative realm right there because
we're going to have 1 day of peace, December 21st, 2012. The whole planet is going to resign itself. No wars, no traffic accidents, no violence of any kind for 1 day. Let's see if we can do it throughout the world and just to prove that it can be done. 1 day of peace.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And that's going to be something that is felt on an energetic level, of course, whether you know you're open to understanding it, aware of it, or feeling it anyway, because when there's that many people focusing on one thing in love, the vibration is tenfold, and we're just going to put it out there, Dan.
We're just
going to put it out there.
I told
because,
you I'm a fault finder.
Hey, it's okay. Sure. You know, I've got that analytical intuitive. You know, I'm the analytical intuitive. That's what I call myself. So I'm a walking dichotomy. And I love the balance of both left and right brains here. So I'm right there with you.
My brain wobbles when I walk. I'm a limping dichotomy.
Well, you know what? It adds a little spice that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
You can't all be the same. That's boring. You know, we need to have a little variety, little spice.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
What are you doing in regard to? I know that you've ended the group meetings because the prisons have changed so much over the last few years and that are, you know, for whatever reasons, we are not supporting our institutions,
yeah.
all institutions, in the way that we really need to. And it's an atrocity. But what can what is it that can continue? Is there a continuing program that's going on for prisoners right now to help them in maintaining or evolving in peace and love?
Bo and Sita Lazoff back on the East Coast, Bo wrote We're All Doing Time. They're still doing, oh, I don't know, lots and lots of mailings with Bo's book, We're All Doing Time, and a bunch of other very enlightening stuff. Bo's really the leader of the prison gurus, so to speak.
Okay.
Bo has always been our leader. If it wasn't for him going into the prisons teaching meditation, I don't know, 30 years ago, there wouldn't be anybody in there doing it because none of the fundamentalists would let us in.
Wow.
So Bo and Sita Lazoff, good work, still running strong.
Wonderful, wonderful. And
that's the Prison Ashram Project, too. I mean, he goes under the Prison Ashram Project, which him and Ram Dass started 30 years ago.
Oh, how neat. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it has been something that was implemented, you know, a while back, but maybe hasn't had as much, you know, support, shall we say, from
no support at all. There's no support for woo-woo stuff. Meditation is woo-woo.
It's becoming more acceptable today, though, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you say that overall, I mean, I know even Christians who 10 years ago wouldn't even, you know, would consider meditation as, oh, that flaky factor, but now are actually practicing it. I mean, I know a Catholic priest who meditates. So
sure.
I find that as an interesting, you know, evolution that has transpired in the last decade because, you know, things are opening up a little bit more, but I know